Yeah, hi, Shane. How are you?
Hardly any introductions were necessary. When Apollo 15 astronaut Alfred Worden arrived at Johnson Space Center, everyone wanted to talk to him, including astronaut Shane Kimbrough. They were so thrilled to meet that they had to take a picture together.
Let's take a picture together.
Oh, you want me in there?
Yeah, we want you right in the middle. You're the guy.
Their journeys are a generation apart, but they align and cross in so many ways. It's a wonder. This will be their very first conversation. 50 years after we landed on the moon, generation after generation fell in love with space exploration.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
I'm Tamika Weatherspoon, and this is Moonwalk, a series of conversations between present-day astronauts, voices from the Apollo era, and kids from the Mars generation. I'm bringing together people on different paths, connected by their love for outer space. Even though Shane Kimbrough is an astronaut himself, he is in awe of Alfred Worden's accomplishments with Apollo 15. Those missions still inspire him to this day, and Alfred Worden is bursting with curiosity about Shane's space shuttle mission. But it doesn't take long for Alfred to realize that they both went into the military, and they both went to the same school.
We have a little bit of a connection. We both went to the United States Military Academy at West Point.
Well, I know you graduated 34 years after I did. God, I hate to think of my age.
Yeah, you had a unique thing. You left West Point, where, you know, typically 98% of the graduates will go into the Army, but you went to the Air Force.
You're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, I went to West Point with the absolute idea that I was going to go in the Army. I thought that the Queen of Battle was the place to be, and that's where you can show leadership or not. But I had a couple of very interesting tactical officers while I was there. They kind of talked me into going to the Air Force because it was more technical back then than the Army. What a joke that was, because the Army turned out to be more technical than the Air Force.
Too funny. All right, so you go into the Air Force. You're a pilot, instructor pilot, many things throughout your career. And then what made you decide, or how did you decide to want to be an astronaut?
Well, I'm not sure I decided, Shane. I was following a career path, the test pilot career path. And I had all the squares filled. When NASA had an application process, I said, throw my name in.
Wow.
And just see what would happen, and got select. Through all those years, I never, ever really gave the space program a thought. Because I just thought there were so many. I don't know how many there were in your selection process, in your selection group.
There were about 6,000, you know, total.
6,000
that we started with.
And how many did they pick?
Picked 11.
See, that's unbelievable. With me, there were 830, and they picked 19. It's still a pretty small percentage. It's like 2% or something. Did you always want to be that?
You know, I kind of always wanted to be one. When I was a young child, I was watching you gentlemen, you know, go to the moon, walk on the moon, do those incredible
Apollo
missions.
Here we go, inferring age again.
This is a good thing this time, because, I mean, you and your teams and the whole NASA team back then were just, you know, obviously breaking new ground, just doing things that nobody ever thought we could ever do. And as I was sitting there watching a black and white TV with my family, and the whole nation would stop in these moments, as you probably remember. And it just struck me that I wanted to do something. I didn't know if I wanted to be an astronaut, but I would do something like you guys were doing, something incredibly brave, you know, things that had never been done before, and just kind of really stretch my boundaries. And I kind of had that kind of mentality throughout my high school and college years even. But honestly, when I went to West Point, I kind of gave up on that dream because I didn't know you could be in the Army and be an astronaut. So I went there. I was like, hey, I'm just going to do best. I'll be an officer in the Army. If I get lucky, I'll go fly.
Yeah.
And so I got lucky to be an Apache pilot and did that for a while. And
yeah, by the time you came along, the Army had more airplanes than the Air Force.
So when I was a lieutenant, a funny story, I was at an Army convention and then just walking around meeting different people. And I saw a gentleman in a flight suit like I'm wearing now. And I just went up to him and said, hey, sir, how you doing? What do you do? And he's like, I'm an Army astronaut. I'm like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. You can do that? And so he really kind of got me on track and got me heading in the right direction. Of course, as you mentioned, the chances of being selected are super slim. But I went to graduate school to kind of get my file a little more
You went
competitive
to a good one.
With the other folks, yeah. and had an incredible experience at Georgia Tech, but eventually got selected. So
yeah.
So let's talk about Apollo 15. Tell me about that. Okay. The training, the mission, the incredible teams to work with.
Again, things were different back then. I came to the Space Center here in 1966. There was nothing between Loop 610 and NASA 1,
wow.
except oil wells. I remember vividly driving down Galveston Freeway and wondering, what is it about this place that's so far away? You know, it's way out here in the middle of nowhere. So it was pretty pretty thin here when I first came. There were only 35 of us.
Right.
It was a pretty small group. In fact, I was, I think, alphabetically anyway, I was number 55. There were 20 guys that had come and gone already.
Okay. Right.
And my, you know, you get the number down at the gym. I don't know.
Yeah,
you
still not get, anymore. But
you don't get those anymore? Okay, we had numbers down there.
That's great.
My number was 55.
All right.
But I was the 35th guy in the office. And it was kind of interesting back in those days. More like a small family than it was an official operation.
Right.
And we operated that way, too. I mean, we had no bureaucracy around us.
Wow.
We could do pretty much anything we wanted. But everybody had the goal in mind of getting the guy on the moon and bringing him back.
Right.
And so that brought everybody together.
I love that.
It was marvelous working under that environment. I've always thought it's easier to go to the moon than it is to stay in Earth orbit.
Hmm.
Because you're going on a straight line.
Right. Yeah, interesting. But I tell you, going to the moon, when you went to the moon, that was incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was such an incredible feat. And we still today are like, how did they do that? You know, it's incredible.
You know, what was interesting is we went into the moon. We never saw the moon. We were going backwards.
Oh, gotcha.
Because we had to do a retro burn to stay in lunar orbit. So we had to be pointing back along our track. So we never saw the moon. And I used to think, boy, I sure hope Mission Control's got this right.
I got here in the class of 2004. They named us the Peacocks because peacocks never fly, right? So that was a great.
But they look good.
Yeah, that's what they said. They're going to parade us around in front of the cameras, and you're never going to fly. That's
right.
What the previous classes named us. So having that going in was not a great start for us. But we went through a couple years of training. You mentioned yours was about 6 months. By the time we got here, it evolved to about a 2-year astronaut candidate training program. Then we got technical jobs or working those. And honestly, we had people in the office tell us, hey, you're never going to fly. Like, you are never going to fly. And shuttle's going to be done. The next vehicle is not going to be here. And you're going to be in this weird place, and you're never going to fly. So that's kind of what we were hearing all the time in the office. But, you know, still
you for us. You had a lot of patience.
For us, patience was key. But also, it was just great being here and part of the team and helping out whatever we were going to do at the time, right? So
what did you guys, over and above those who were going to fly the thing, see, that's another huge difference between Apollo and shuttle. We spent half our time studying geology because that's what we're going to do when we get to the moon. The shuttle is a totally different beast. Now you've got groups that fly it and you got groups that do research from it. So explain what goes on with the training and all that. What do you guys do?
Yeah, great point. So the two main categories we had back then were pilots and mission specialists,
mm-hmm.
right? So the mission specialists were, like you said, the people who were going to do some research, some science, the spacewalkers, the robotic arm flyers. Those all kind of fell into the mission specialist category. I was a pilot, but mm-hmm. not a jet pilot because I was an Army helicopter pilot. So I didn't qualify to be a pilot type on the shuttle. So I knew I was going to be in the mission specialist category. Mm-hmm. We're kind of in between the two groups, right? Honestly. So we're not these super smart PhD scientists and we're not these military jet pilots, but we can talk both languages and we're kind of a nice mix in the middle there. So one thing I want to talk about on space shuttle is the way we landed, right? Very different than what you did in experience. So I want to hear your comments as well. But as you know, the shuttle landed on a runway. We only had one shot at it, so that was the real stressor.
That I would have loved.
You had one chance, right? And so the training really comes in, and the whole team, the whole crew is in Mission Control as well, is working to make sure we get that one chance right.
See, the problem with the way we came, I love the fact that the shuttle landed on a runway because you got control.
Right.
When you come down in parachutes, you ain't got control. Once those parachutes are open, you're at their mercy. And on our flight, we lost one. So we came down in two chutes, which was kind of interesting. But we learned something from that. So.
Right. And how about how long before the rescue forces were there to pick you up? You remember that?
10 seconds.
That quickly. Oh. Wow. Okay.
In fact, when our parachute went on us, there had to be five or six or seven helicopters floating around, all Navy Coast Guard type helicopters. And they're all screaming on radio so much. Finally, I had to get on emergency frequency, get on guard channel and say, hey, would all you guys shut up? You know, we can't hear what we're doing down here. But everybody was so excited about it. But the Navy SEALs were in the water 10 seconds after we landed.
They're
unbelievable.
Very impressive.
Well, you guys didn't have to do that.
Nope.
See, you didn't have the,
pleasure
of having Navy SEALs come and rescue
you. Yeah,
I'm
part of a team that's planning for our future launches here with Commercial Crew and Orion. For everybody that doesn't know, we're flying with the Russians on their Soyuz spacecraft. The missions are generally about 6 months long, so much different than Shuttle or Apollo.
Yeah, right.
So the duration is kind of the big deal now. Some folks, we've had a person go up for a year, as you probably know. And we got some people coming that are actually in space right now that'll be up there for 10 or 11 months. So it's a different world.
Seems to me like that's a really important thing, though, is that we've got to find out what's going to happen long term. But my question is, what do you see in the future for you?
For me? Well, as you know, most of our time is doing technical jobs, and that's what I'm doing now. And I'm working with both the commercial providers, Boeing and SpaceX, to work on their landing day ops. So
30 years in since you graduated.
Correct. Yeah. So,
where do you go from here?
I don't know. It's a great question. My wife asks me every day, what are we doing next? I don't know. We'll see whether I fly again or not. It's irrelevant, really, with the job I'm doing now and the passion I still have for wanting to contribute to the space program. I've kind of had this theme in my whole life, really, of having a common mission and, you know, going to West Point and then immediately into the Army. For me, you're always, in that case, serving, right? So we're serving our nation in that case. Yeah. When I came to NASA, that did not change at all. When I just went on my recent space station mission, when I'm up there for 6 months, I realized that, you know, I'm not even doing missions just for NASA. I'm doing missions for all of humanity and the experiments we're doing. So it just took that serving, that common mission I kind of had of serving others, to a much higher level when I'm realizing I'm doing things for all of humanity, not just for the U.S. or not just for NASA.
Moonwalk was produced and written by me, Tamika Weatherspoon, with audio support by Shannon Harrison, graphics by Akalina Sanchez, and editing by Todd Holslander. Our executive producer is Don Geraci. You can see videos, behind-the-scenes images, and more from this series at houstonpublicmedia.org/moon.